Welcome to Talking 80s Music. I'm Martin Hennessy, and this is your place for news and information about your favorite 80s artists. Back a while ago, we actually talked about trying to get a couple more interviews in, and due to some technical difficulties, we decided to hold off on some. This week, we resume them with a little talk with Mr. David Kaufman of The Nails. Here's the big hit that you'll actually know them for, which most people already know them for. Here's 88 Lines About 44 Women. Dance mix.
It's about 44 women.
We'll be back next week. She'll be here. I'll be square. I'll be there somewhere.
What made you go to New Jersey, you know, away from Colorado?
The band The Nails are actually not from Colorado.
Okay, because I kept on seeing a lot of things calling you a Colorado band and out of Boulder, and I'm going, what?
No, see, the predecessor band to The Nails, called The Raiders, was formed when I was a student at the University of Colorado in the mid-70s, and I am actually from New York.
Oh, okay. And so did they relocate up there, or?
No, what happened is we played a lot in 1976 and 77, including opening for the Ramones in Denver and, you know, a lot of stuff during the early punky days of, you know, the punk rock movement. And then we relocated to New York.
Oh, man.
And, hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
And then during that time, the band made some personnel changes within a year and a half and became The Nails.
Oh, man.
And when my brother came into the band, the drummer left, and we got a new drummer, and we got a guitar player, and Steve O'Rourke, you know, and it eventually became The Nails because The Ravers was a different guitar player, you know, a different drummer, and a different bass player.
Now, actually, I saw you've been credited with guitar and electronics also, as well as keyboards. What got you into keyboards?
Excuse me? What got me into keyboards?
Yeah.
I was always the keyboard player, and, you know, when I fooled around with guitar, there was a recording of the original 88 Lines, you know, that was recorded way back in 1981, hit version people are familiar with, where I did play some guitar on that, and I played a little guitar on a single we put out in 1980, but on the RCA CDs and the ones that are re-released, I only play keyboards on those, and that's all I ever played live with people.
Because actually, I love that new remix of it. There's the one that I think you sent me. The dance mix.
That was a remix made in 1985.
Okay. Which,
so
yeah.
Go
ahead.
that was redone in 1985, you know, through someone RCA hired. So I thought I'd send you that just so it's a little different version than what those people hear.
So now tell me about some of the stuff that was going on up to the point when you recorded Mood Swing.
The Nails really, you know, became solidified in 1980 when Steve O'Rourke had left the band. And in 1980, we sort of got into a ska period because we heard the first recordings of Madness and the Specials from England at that time, and that's where we met Douglas, you know, the saxophone player, and he became a member of the band, and then we sort of morphed back into playing the rock and roll music that we knew, and Steve O'Rourke came back into the band, and the original 88 Lines started getting airplay, especially in Los Angeles, and we toured Los Angeles on our own in 1982, where we drove out there, and we hardly any of us had any money at the time, mm-hmm. and we played a lot of clubs and opened for this group Romeo Void in the San Fernando Valley that was, you know, a signed group at the time, and they had their one hit, I guess, Never Say Never.
Great song.
You know, and then we just kept on playing, and our manager at that time brought various people to our shows, you know, including people from major labels and what they used to call playing for your supper. You know, I don't know if that's called that now, you know, with the internet and everything. But, you know, eventually there were some people from RCA, you know, in 1983, you know, this man, Bruce Harris, that was interested in signing us. And his colleague, Greg Geller, who is known for putting together a lot of compilations at RCA and elsewhere, including Sony BMG these days, I understand, signed us to the RCA contract. You know, and then in 1984, you know, we rehearsed and recorded Root Swing.
Now, were spoken word vocals going pretty much something that you guys were shooting for as a difference between some of the other songs and some of the other acts that were out there?
No, that's something that Mark has always done, even in the Ravers songs. So he was always into you know, singing some of his vocals and talking some of his vocals, you know, sort of modeled after, I guess, Lou Reed in a certain sense.
Yeah.
Because you could sense a lot of that.
Yeah, so he was always into doing that.
Okay, because I was curious about that because that is such a, it's definitely something that stands out as well as your keyboard work. When you actually listen to some of the songs, you actually hear, you know, it's, you know, some very creative lyrics, very intelligent lyrics, and so
Mark
different.
Mark does all the lyrics.
And then actually, and you actually did some co-writing on 88 Lines.
Yes, because him, Mark and I originally just fooled around in our home recording studio we had at the time in 1981 in the Chelsea section of New York City. You know, compared to what home studios have these days, it was very primitive in 1981, where, you know, these days you can record, you know, entire songs into your computer. In those days, you know, there were, you know, what was called reel-to-reel tape recorders. Sometimes they call that stringy or streamy tape today. You know, where you put these two reels onto this machine and then it goes through a recording unit and records magnetic signals onto this tape, and that's, you know. Actually,
so
they still
how many
use
tracks
that
were that was, how many tracks were you working with at that time?
No, 88 Lines is a 4-track recording. The original 88 Lines.
Now did
where
it,
excuse me?
Now, most of the vocals were written by the lyrics were written by Mark.
Mark does all the lyrics.
Did you guys actually have any complaints about any names that were thrown in there on 88 Lines?
No. I mean, he always called his songs little fictions.
Uh huh.
And you know, maybe someday you'll interview him. You know, he currently lives in Taos, New Mexico.
Okay.
But no, you know, he does all his lyrics, and there were no complaints by us, even if we, you know, sort of knew by code who some of these people were.
So there's a little bit of reality to some of those?
Yeah, a little bit. You can say that.
Now, actually, after the success of the single, of course, which now made it onto Mood Swings for the album. What the next single coming off of that one was that Home of the Brave or?
No, it really was Let It All Hang Out, which is a remake of a 60s song by the group The Hombres. And RCA also did a video with us on Let It All Hang Out. It was the only video we ever did. You can see it on the Nails website at www.the-nails.com. And and they also cut the 7-inch so-called single version, which was remixed by the same person that remixed the 88 lines. On the remastered CD is a longer version of Let It All Hang Out, not the single mix version. And the 7-inch version was put out as a single in Home of the Brave. Now, I believe, you know, anecdotally, there was some sort of video done for Home of the Brave that did not involve the band. It was some artistically done video, but I've never seen it. As far as I know, you know, no one I know can come up with it these days, but I'd love to have it if someone has it in some, you know, VCR library, you know, in their attic.
Let's hope it resurfaces somewhere.
Yeah.
So now you took a little bit of time between. Were you guys doing some touring between Mood Swings and the Mood Swing and the follow up Dangerous Dreams?
Yes, we did some touring. We never did sustained touring, but we'd go out 3 weeks at a time here and 3 weeks at a time there. We toured where we were most popular, according to record sales. So New England was very popular, especially the Boston area, where some people thought we were actually from Boston. So we used to tour New Haven and Boston and various clubs around there, Providence, Rhode Island. So we did tour California after Mood Swing. We also toured Virginia and the Washington, D.C. area, as well as Eastern Canada, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal.
So does that mean
we never...
Did you guys go into Dangerous...
Never got to Europe.
Oh, sorry about that. Did you guys go into Dangerous Dreams with a different type of outlook from the first album?
I guess the only difference with Dangerous Dreams, and I think it's a difference with a lot of people's debut albums as opposed to their sophomore albums, is the debut album usually constitutes more or less years of songwriting, where some of the songs were written in 1982 and some of the songs written in 1983, and then some of the songs were written around the time of the recording of the album, whereas Dangerous Dreams, all of the songs were pretty much written in 1985 and 1986 at one time or another. So it was all written in a closer period of time. So some people think, and sometimes we even think, the songs have a little more continuity in Dangerous Dreams than they did on Mood Swing.
Is that just because of the way they were laid out, or the fact that you actually had a little more time to kind of put those together?
I think because they were all written in the same time period. So maybe the band, you know, this is looking back over 20 years now, but maybe the band was in the same mindset while we were composing these songs. And we also put out a demo at that time for a record producer for Dangerous Dreams. And some of those demos are on my brother's website, which is, you know, because he was the bass player in the band, my brother George, and that's www.gmkmg.com, which are his initials for it backwards.
Which, of course, over at his website, we also have a lot of the stuff from Corpus Christi, which we'll get back to later.
he's remastered all the stuff from Corpus Christi, and he also has a little pictorial about the remastering of Mood Swing and Dangerous Dreams that we did last year. Almost a year ago, it was in September of 2006 that we did the remastering session at Sony Studios.
Now, what spurred that
George
on?
George and I attended.
What brought the interest to remastering and actually getting those out? Because I know they're hard to find otherwise before the re-release.
We had sold bootleg CDs on our website for, you know, pretty incredibly high prices because we weren't allowed to sell them technically. And we had always wanted to get them remastered, but we couldn't find people to talk to who would be interested in remastering them. It seemed like, you know, none of these boutique labels were interested. and we couldn't find anybody at BMG who we'd talk to. We'd try to email and we'd try to fax, and no one would respond to us. So finally, and actually it was in 2005, I just sent, you know, what they call a snail mail, to whom it may concern letter, to BMG Special Products, and that's what it was called. And just say, you know, we're from the band, you know, we'd like to remaster our records, you know, what does it take for us to do that? And so luckily for us, it landed on somebody's desk, Sony BMG, because I was unaware of the merger at that time between Sony and BMG, and BMG
right.
is the successor to RCA. And I got a phone call from someone in their licensing department, and that's how it all started. And they were, you know, they were interested in licensing to us, I think, as sort of a new venture, even though it's a very small deal for Sony, so they really didn't have to do it.
Oh, man. Because actually it's so great to finally get some of those in a good, you know, to actually view the difference that you know, production-wise, as you remaster some of those.
We were very satisfied with the remasters. So, we ironed out a deal with Sony BMG where, you know, the way it is with most record deals, we have to pay them to re-release our own records, but we don't have to pay them a lot. And they gave us a good deal to have them remastered in their studios, you know, with a Grammy-nominated mastering engineer. And because we remastered with Sony, they actually got the original tapes out of the RCA vault, which they told us is in some abandoned mine in Pennsylvania. That's where they keep all the old recording, including, you know, all of Elvis's recordings.
Jeez.
And other famous recordings that were on RCA. So they dug out the tapes, and we even saw, you know, three or four boxes of tapes that they brought, you know, some original masters and some copies and the remixes, and it was really amazing that they actually have them cataloged in such a way that they can find them and bring them to us. So they brought them to the studio, and we did two sessions of remastering, one for Mood Swing and one for Dangerous Dreams.
Now, did you the quality of the recordings that were preserved like that, pretty good?
Yes, they were pretty good. But sometimes what they have to do in professional studios is what's called baking the tapes, where if it's a certain type of reel-to-reel tape, they put it in this oven for 8 hours at a certain temperature, like 150 degrees, I don't know what it exactly is, to prevent the so-called flaking of the particles. And then when they when it comes out, so they let it cool off, and then the tape is sort of restored. And they had to do that with one of our tapes, but Dangerous Dreams was actually an ancient digital format that was done by Mitsubishi. It was a digital tape, similar to, like, today they have mini DV cameras where you're recording your digital, your video signal onto a tape, but it's still digital. So it was an old ancient format of digital two-track, and Sony Studio, since it's such a large studio, they actually had the machine to play it back. Otherwise, we would have had to look for a studio that had this Mitsubishi or some X80 machine to play it back. And because it's such an old machine, there's no way to actually have straight digital to remaster it from, because it was a proprietary output, so we got an analog out from the X80, but still the quality was so good. And again, George and I were there in post-remastering sessions with Dick at Sony Studios.
Did you find anything interesting inside on some of the tapes that you didn't actually use for the full albums, or?
No, because we knew what we wanted to use, and there are some outtakes, especially from Dangerous Dreams, but, you know, even listening to them now, we felt the songs weren't so good, and we didn't want to include them. the live song that's on Dangerous Dreams is a live version of this song, The Veil, which they did bake the tape on that one, was actually sent to me by a Toronto radio station around 5 years ago, where that radio station called The Edge 102 in Toronto moved offices from one building to another, and that's when they found this tape, and they sent it to us. And there's actually five songs on it, but that was the best one, and since it was one of the songs that were recorded in the studio for Dangerous Dreams, we decided to include that on a remastered CD of Dangerous Dreams. And the live version was actually recorded before we went into the studio to record it. It was during a tour in 1985 where we were sort of testing some of our new material at people in Canada.
Oh, man. Now, actually, the big single from Dangerous Dreams was Things You Left Behind?
It was Things You Left Behind. And it did get a lot of airplay in the day, but it's sort of a forgotten song now, where 88 Lines seemed to have the staying power and Things You Left Behind didn't. But that seems to be common with a lot of artists, because there were a lot of artists that got a huge amount of airplay when I was going to college, and you just never hear them at all now on any radio station. Maybe you only hear them, you know, on web radio. Like, you know, Leon Russell and Spirit and, you know, groups, you know, people like that. You know, I felt they were fantastic performers, and you just don't hear them on classic rock or any station anymore.
Oh, man. Well, let's hear Things You Left Behind by The Nails.
One word. Goodbye.
I think you're right, actually. It does belong on a couple of 80s compilations. That, because I know there's a lot of those that they find there's a lot of songs that actually have some staying power that didn't chart as high as some of the other ones. You have songs like I Melt With You wasn't a big chart hit. You have,
which song?
I Melt With You. That one actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, number 69, which a lot of people would tell you it's a top 10 hit. there's a lot of those that hold.
I think
that
it was re-released because of a movie, mm-hmm. and then it sort of became a top 10 hit after that, years after its original release.
And I think what 88 Lines does, and I think it actually holds a significance in some people's minds that it actually stands out as a song that really should have been a huge, huge hit in a top 10 success. And I think people retroactively look at it that way.
Yeah, I think so. And also that, you know, it's water very far under the bridge, but we weren't really served well by RCA in terms of promotion. You know, maybe they probably thought the song was kind of controversial. They were new to our type of band at the time, you know, where the big hit bands of the time for RCA, you know, Jefferson Starship, was just called the Starship, and, mm-hmm. you know, we built this city on rock and roll, and that's what they thought music was, I think they didn't know what to do with us, perhaps if they had made, you know, video and radio lines and really pushed it, who knows, but that's the way it goes.
Well, let's, okay, now after the release of Dangerous Dreams, there was a little time off before some of the band members decided to go ahead and come together and try and release another album, which was Corpus Christi. And tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that's because we got dropped from the label.
After RCA?
Because after Dangerous Dreams, because it didn't sell well enough, they didn't really promote it well. Nevertheless, it did make the Billboard's top 200 with virtually no promotion at all. It was in the top 200 for a couple of weeks. So we went and recorded a new demo ostensibly to get a new deal, but then we never finished that, and we sort of fragmented at that time. work on some solo stuff myself, which never went anywhere, but I've just been putting a lot of that stuff on my own website these days, which is david.devishmail.com. I put some really old stuff that my brother and I recorded during the nails that's on there right now. And then when the band regrouped as a four-piece to record Corpus Christi, I just wasn't interested in recording at that time. But that was about 1988, 1989.
And of course, actually, since then, actually, you could probably tell everybody a little bit about a reason why not to go ahead and pick up the album online or over at their local retailer.
What happened was, I don't know if there was some type of falling out, but it's just the simple fact that Safe House Records, which we knew, we used to work with this person from Safe House Records when we did some of our original releases, including the original 88 Lines, which was released on what was then called an EP, an extended play 33, called Hotel for Women. This was in 1981. It was re-released in 1982 by a bigger company called Gem, J-E-M, and Passport Records in Canada. And simply that they've never paid the nails a cent for that CD ever.
Oh, man.
So, and the person is hard to find, and so we're, if there's any person that has any information about, Safe House, we'd love to hear it. So that's why we ask people not to buy Corpus Christi, either the CD or on any online music store or ringtones, and you can get all the songs free on George's website, and they've been remastered and can sound better than the CD.
Which actually, it's nice to see also the liner notes for each song on his website next to each download.
Yeah, there's a description.
Uh-huh.
I haven't looked at that in a while myself, and just because I was only peripherally involved in Corpus Christi, I helped remix one of those other alternate 88 Lines versions that are on there, and some of the songs on Corpus Christi came out of our rehearsals, where I wrote the music, but I didn't record any of the music.
Right, like four tracks, I think. 14
yeah.
Dreams.
Well, Corpus Christi was an 8-track song, was with an 8-track recorder, because we had improved our studio at the time. I think the songs I was more involved with was the song Nice to Me, parts of 14 Dreams. I don't remember now all the songs on there. I think there was one called The Spirit and Flesh.
The Flesh and Holy Sea?
Or The Flesh. The Holy Sea was pretty much Steve O'Rourke's song, except for the keyboard riff, which is my keyboard riff, but I didn't play it.
I remember actually going and actually finding your website just out of the blue and seeing something about, I think, did you guys actually get together to actually just do a couple live performances a while ago?
No, what we did do is five of us with Alex Douglas, the sax player, got together in 2000 and actually rehearsed for around 7 or 8 months and actually rehearsed around 30 new songs. And I put one of them onto the website a couple of years ago now. I forgot the name of the song.
Well, hopefully if you re-put it up there, some people might actually wind up, getting a chance to hear an updated version of the Nails, too.
Yeah.
But so was that with a possibility of just seeing what you guys could do as a possibility?
Well, we were thinking of actually recording a new album at the time, but then Mark had to leave on a business trip and then essentially never came back to New York. I thought someone else was calling in. So that was my wife, I think. That got sidetracked, and then nothing ever happened with those songs, but we do have them. You know, we did record almost every one of our rehearsals during that time, and Mike Ratty, our drummer, we recorded in a very small apartment in New York City, and he was using electronic drum kit through speakers, so because of that, you know, and not real drums in a rehearsal studio, the sound is very balanced on the recordings. We recorded either with a cassette, you know, a cassette player with a stereo microphone, and my brother had a digital, you know, it's called a DAT machine, which is these little digital cassettes.
So do you think there's a chance of hearing that at some point?
You know, it really depends on Mark, because their rehearsals, and they're very rough, and we never actually recorded the songs. So, and I'd have to also dig up these CDs, so I'd have to find them. I'd have to find them in storage in my apartment, because I don't think I've converted them into MP3s.
Man. Because actually, I do want to say that you actually have one of the most comprehensive websites that I've seen detailing your band, and especially being the webmaster yourself.
Because I put that up, I think, in around, I don't know, 1999 or 2000, when I was just learning some HTML, and I had a small website courtesy of CompuServe at the time. You know, then eventually I was able to get the domain name Doug-Nails, because the nails was taken. Probably someone that's into the fingernail fetish. and just that it's, you know, very old school website. I don't know anything about Flash, or, you know, it would take so long to do what's called style sheets and all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad for the compliment about the website.
Well, you have so much detail in there with radio stations that play you, interviews from the past. You have so much in there, and actually, you know, with your own side one, you actually pretty much started your own blog back before it was really even chic.
Yeah, I say that now. This is what they call a blog now. You know, then I was thinking of doing some new entries, but I just haven't done it.
No, well, it gets hard after a while when you actually because I know you're a busy person. You have even just keeping up with this as well as actually what were you doing now? Also, I remember you remember something about it, but I'm trying to remember.
Well, you know, I guess most people when they go into this situation, they end up somewhere along the line of getting a real job. Mm-hmm. You know, so it suffices to say that I have a real job. There was a song by this performer, Nick Lowe, called They Called It Rock, that was out in 1977, where they say, like, the drummer is a bookie, the singer is a whore, the bass player is selling clothes he never would have worn. So you consider, that we're all doing that kind of thing.
Which, I do find that a lot of the people I've talked to that actually went off, I do find keyboardists tend to go ahead and head off to computer jobs. Just because I think it's...
Yeah, some kind of computer job.
Because usually it's either an ease with technology, that they aren't afraid of it, or something. But actually, again, I want to thank you again for your time. Where can somebody actually pick up the re-releases of Dangerous Dreams and Mood Swing?
Right now, we don't have actually any distributor, but it can be gotten at our website, www.the-nails.com. It's also available on Amazon.com. It's also available at cdbaby.com, as well as on iTunes Music Store. And there's a host of other digital music retailers where a digital rights MP3 can be downloaded, so it can be played on any MP3 player. And I think one is called payplayfm.com or something like that. I have a link on the Nails website for that. And eventually I will put up all the digital download sites where it's available, because I haven't listed that, but they are available on several.
How do you feel about digital distribution in general?
That's the wave of the future. So, it used to be, when we recorded in our day, that the album was important and that, you should listen to a whole album and that the songs flow together and that all of the songs are good. And I guess these days people just want to buy the songs they like and not buy a whole album, and that's, their right, and, what they want to do.
Do you think your songs actually maybe get a little more distribution via digital than it might have if it just wasn't in the store at the time, or...
What, if digital distribution was around 20 years ago, are you saying?
Do you think actually some of the problems that you might have had with RCA at the time might have actually made it a little easier if digital distribution was around at that time?
Oh, if the internet and digital distribution was around at the time, I would think it would have been better for us, but there, I didn't even, have an email address till 1993, and people think that's early for having an email address. So, in 1984 and 86, anything with computers was, a blink in someone's eye as far as, widespread distribution. But, that was the era we were in, and that's the way it goes again.
Thank you again for your time, David. I if anybody wants to actually hear any of David's own stuff, he actually has posted several on his section of the Nails website, v-nails.com. You could hear a couple little outtakes here and there of what he's actually been recording in and between during his sessions with the Nails. Thank you again, David.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Bye-bye.
Take care. That was David Kaufman of the Nails, and I'm Martin Hennessy from Talking 80s Music. And next up, we actually have a song from their first album, Mood Swing. Here's Home of the Brave.
Oh, God of hell, I said I love the suit that the devil gave me to wear to Beirut, where the whores are dancing on the tabletops and the jukebox.